It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Keely Boltina in for Kate Archer-Kent. Mosquitoes are outdoors and they're inside. They buzz around in the daytime, and once the sun sets, they hide in warm places and can hibernate to survive chilly temps. There's no real escaping them. But we do try. What are your tips for avoiding mosquito bites? Do you wear insect repellents with DEET, or do you avoid those? Have you noticed more mosquitoes in your neighborhood or in your favorite park this year? 800-642-1234. Tell us about it. Ask your questions about mosquitoes. Lyric Bartholomew is our guide to all things mosquitoes. She's a UW-Madison professor who studies infectious disease agents in mosquitoes, ticks, and other parasites. Lyric, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks. I'm delighted to be back.
Wisconsin's mosquito season, it's pretty typical, right? It builds in the spring and then it starts to wind down in the fall. When do we see peak mosquito time?
Yeah, it's interesting. That is generally the plan, right? That we would see this kind of build up and then decline. But our weather this year has been so strange that that's been interestingly delayed and altered compared to what we've seen in years previous.
What does it look like then?
So we're still seeing a lot of mosquito activity. We've had plenty of water this summer, right? And so there's lots of standing water in people's yards and lots of places for mosquitoes to breed. So so your listenership maybe will be intrigued to know that mosquitoes lay their eggs in some sort of standing water. That could be a bird bath or your gutters in your home if they're not regularly cleaned out. And the eggs hatch and a larva comes out, and then it grows and it grows and it grows and becomes a pupa and then an adult. And that whole process takes about a week. And I think most of us could probably go into our yards or our spaces and probably find some standing water that has some mosquito larvae or pupae in it.
Sandbox pail that collected some water, the inside
Absolutely.
Of a tire you've got sitting around.
Absolutely.
All of those spaces. Mm-hmm. So what does the mosquito population look like this year compared to other years? What are we looking at numbers-wise?
So numbers-wise, it's been interesting. I run a regional center of excellence for vector-borne disease, and so we talk to partners across a 5-state region and hear about mosquitoes. In many states surrounding us, the mosquito numbers, at least the numbers of mosquitoes that transmit West Nile virus, for example, have been lower and delayed, and there have been fewer mosquitoes actually infected with the virus, which has been interesting. Here in Wisconsin, we've seen some higher numbers of mosquitoes over in Milwaukee, those mosquitoes that transmit West Nile. But really, the mosquitoes that impact us most are the ones that are in our backyards, and they're probably about average.
And is that true, too, in central and western Wisconsin? Those are some areas where we've seen some unusually wet summers.
Yeah, it's unusually wet, but it's also been unusually chilly, too. So everything's been a little delayed. The amount of time that it takes a mosquito to develop in standing water is definitely a function of outdoor temperatures. And so everything's just a little off. I think we're seeing the same thing even in field crops and other environmentally dependent sorts of organisms.
We're talking about mosquitoes, and we'll talk about how to protect against the diseases they carry. Lyric Bartholomew is our guide. She's a professor in the Department of Pathobiological Sciences at UW-Madison. I'm Keely Boltina, and we're wondering, what are your tips to avoid mosquito bites? Are there a lot of mosquitoes where you live? What's going on in your area? Call 800-642-1234. And Mike from Madison has a question for us. Good morning, Mike.
Yeah, good morning. I've been on the keto diet for about 3 months now, and I've always had problems with mosquitoes my entire life. I'm a big outdoors person, but since I've been on the keto diet, I rarely, if ever, now get bit, and I'm just curious if your guest has any thoughts on that.
Mike, that's so fascinating. I think you're your own experiment, which is awesome. So you have your lived experience from prior to being on the keto diet and your experience now, and you're seeing that difference. It's certainly possible that your diet changes the way you present yourself to a mosquito, right? So We know, for example, that sometimes if you eat a banana, that might change your attractiveness to a mosquito. And so the things that we put into our bodies impact the volatiles that come off of our skin. And certainly the things that you're eating on a keto diet could alter the way your volatiles come off of your skin. So I would encourage you to keep that experiment up. Maybe try and shift and go the other way and see if they start feeding on you again. And then we can start a study, you and me.
Lyric, thanks again, Mike. We appreciate the call. So apparently diet can affect it. But there are times, I mean, I am just fighting to scratch my ankle right now talking with you about this. I am one of those people that just gets bitten more by mosquitoes, and it doesn't matter. My spouse and I can eat the same thing. They leave him alone and they come for me. So what draws mosquitoes to certain people more than others?
Isn't it interesting? So
interesting, so, infuriating,
something like that. Right. So I'm on the fortunate side of being not so attractive to mosquitoes, and actually I've been bitten so many times that I don't really have much of a response to mosquito bites anymore. So that's another thing that happens. Maybe you could look forward to that.
Great. Thank you.
But, we know that there are some basic things that are really attractive to mosquitoes, like body heat, carbon dioxide, octanol, lactic acid. So there's some fundamentals, but probably all of us are presenting those fundamental things out to a mosquito. So there's got to be some other things that make people particularly delicious. And it may be related to the bacteria on our skin, actually.
Let's go to another call then. Darcy in Appleton has a similar question. Darcy, welcome to the morning show.
Good morning. Thank you. So I'm just curious, do certain blood types attract more mosquitoes? I'm AB positive, and it seems like they love me. I also have experienced using some essential oils like lavender oil, and that seems to help. So I'm interested in your thoughts.
Yeah, it's really interesting. A lot of people have thought that maybe blood type impacts mosquito attractiveness. But I think the bottom line is that some people are more attractive than others based on a real variety of different variables. And then as it relates to essential oils, we know that there's actually a lot of really great work that's ongoing on essential oils. And there are some components of essential oil mixtures that are absolutely repellent to mosquitoes. And so if that works for you, I think, you probably smell really nice and the mosquitoes aren't feeding on you. So it sounds like a win-win.
There are advantages there. Mm-hmm. Wisconsin is home to at least 56 different species of mosquitoes. That's according to UW scientists. They don't all bite humans. Are some species more common, or are they more aggressive than others?
Yeah, there's a real range. And so actually one of my PhD students just went through and really scrutinized that number of mosquitoes in Wisconsin. And we've landed on 53 now.
53,
that's our number. Yeah. And I think it's fascinating to look at all the different kinds of mosquitoes and think about all the different biology. Some of them even feed on frogs and other reptiles and herptiles. So there are a wide variety of mosquitoes out there, and only a few of them that we probably encounter with great frequency. The ones that are in our backyards right now, in my backyard at least, are a mosquito called Aedes trivittatus that has these kind of racing stripes on their thorax. And they're really aggressive biters, and they'll feed in the day. But we have other mosquitoes, like the mosquitoes that transmit West Nile virus. Those tend to feed, as you mentioned, at dawn and dusk, and feed on a lot, often on birds and people. So there's a real variety.
Lyric Bartholomew stays with us. We're focusing on these mosquitoes that target people, and we want to know what questions you have about them. Do you have a big reaction to those tiny bites? Have you been diagnosed with West Nile virus after a mosquito bit you? Hear your story at 800-642-1234. I'm Keely Boltina. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Keely Boltina. The Centers for Disease Control claims almost everyone in the world has had a mosquito bite. And we don't have vaccines or medicines for most of the viruses that mosquitoes spread. So that leaves some people worried about West Nile and Zika and other mosquito-borne illnesses. What's your story? How are the mosquitoes in your area this year? Are they super aggressive or not really so bad? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. Lyric Bartholomew studies infectious diseases spread by mosquitoes, among other insects. She's a professor at UW-Madison. And let's go to Lee now in Burlington, who has a question about the habits of mosquitoes.
Hi.
Lee, good morning.
Good morning. Hi.
What's your question this morning?
Hi, I wanted to find out, you know, for mosquitoes or ticks, if I... You know, a section of land has really no animals on it for mosquitoes to feed on. What's their practical range for flying, you know, from a nest out to go find someone where if they, you know, exceeded that range, they would use up more energy flying out and back than they would get from feeding?
Lyric, do they have to return anywhere or are mosquitoes nomads?
They're really nomads, and I love this question, Lee, so thank you for calling. We know that different mosquitoes have different flight ranges, so just like you allude to, and scientists have developed these things called flight mills so that we can study this, where a mosquito is tethered to a string and flies around in a circle as many times as it can until it totally exhausts itself. So we do have a good idea for some species how far they can fly. The mosquitoes that transmit West Nile virus probably fly about a mile from where they're emerging from the water that they're kind of born in. But some mosquitoes are much more sort of homebodies, and they don't end up going terribly far away from where they originally entered into the environment. And it's true that if there are no other animals for mosquitoes to feed on, that sometimes they have to get creative. And this is actually related to the West Nile story. So one of the things that we see with West Nile transmission in the U.S. is that there's this real distinct timing. So we see that people start to get infected around August and September. And some scientists have correlated that actually with the migration away of robins. So robins fly away. The mosquitoes would like to feed on robins. But once the robins are gone, the mosquitoes get sort of desperate and they have to switch their what we call host feeding preference and so start to feed on people instead. So mosquitoes generally have some particular blood that they like to feed on the most, but in a pinch, absolutely, they'll switch hosts and take blood from where they can get it.
What about West Nile virus? We don't have vaccines exist to prevent it or treat it. Most people don't feel sick if they get infected. What are the dangers here?
So West Nile is a virus that can make people really sick, and so that's really the problem. About 1 in 5 people who get bitten by a West Nile infected mosquito show some signs of disease. That may be a headache or a fever. And then 1 in about 150 people get really sick. And part of that is probably determined by age and immune status. So we tend to see that people get the sickest when they're older.
Right. Yeah, my next question is really then, are researchers trying to figure out how to do this? I mean, is this one of those issues, West Nile virus through mosquitoes, that is top of mind for scientists right now?
Yeah, so I think the problem with West Nile is that if you get sick with this virus, it does make you really, really sick. And for some people, exposure to West Nile, as I said, in those 1 out of every 150 people that get really sick, there can be lifelong consequences. So people are paralyzed, or they have headaches or vision trouble. There's these what we call long-term sequelae associated with West Nile infection. So it's really important to try and find ways to intervene so that people don't get that sick. We actually do have a vaccine for horses because horses get terribly sick from West Nile as well, but we don't have a vaccine for people. And our only intervention then is to try and prevent people from getting bitten in the first place. And so Actually, today, one of the things that I'm going to do is go over to Milwaukee and assist a graduate student of mine in trying to control mosquitoes in the greater Milwaukee area so that we can really understand if mosquito control and intervention reduces the number of West Nile infected mosquitoes out in the environment.
We're talking about mosquitoes and how to protect against diseases that they carry. Lyric Bartholomew is our mosquito expert. I'm Keely Boltina, and we're looking for your strategies to avoid mosquito bites or questions you might have. Call 800-642-1234. We have a question from Jesse in Green Bay. Jesse, welcome to the Ideas Network. What's your question?
Hi, good morning. My question is, Monday I was working around a lot of mosquitoes, and I happened to swallow one of them, and today I woke up with a little cold, and my throat is sore. I was just wondering if can you get sick by swallowing one.
Jesse, thank you for that question. We're talking about getting sick when mosquitoes bite us, but what about if we accidentally swallow a bug?
Yeah, so the pathogens that a mosquito transmits, it's always a female mosquito that does that, by the way. She does that really by feeding directly on your blood. And passing the pathogen or virus or malaria, parasite, or whatever it is, directly into your bloodstream. If you were to swallow a mosquito that was infected, then the pathogen doesn't have entry into the place that it needs to be in order to initiate an infection. So you just got a little extra protein by swallowing that mosquito, sort of like eating a little shrimp or something.
It's good news for Jesse then.
Yes, absolutely.
Excellent. We've talked about West Nile virus. Zika, you know, became a global health crisis in 2016. Seems to have faded from public attention. Is Zika still a threat?
Zika is absolutely still a threat. We haven't seen as much activity of that virus in the U.S. since that scare in 2016, but certainly there are still a lot of other countries that are impacted by Zika, and there are some other viruses that that are less on the radar, but perhaps more distressing in terms of how they could impact our greater public health. So that same mosquito that transmits Zika virus also transmits a virus called dengue. That's sometimes known as breakbone fever, so it's a really painful infection to get. And that mosquito transmits yellow fever, and it transmits a virus called chikungunya. So the fact that that mosquito is in the United States presents a risk to all of us for all of those different viruses, actually.
Lyric, you're wearing a black T-shirt with these big red stripes across it, white letters that say mosquitoes and me.
Yeah.
You worked at a camp in Iowa called Mosquitoes and Me. What'd you do?
Yeah. So I have a project in collaboration with some colleagues at Iowa State University where we work with a community in Des Moines, Iowa, that's historically underserved. So it's a community where kids have come from all over the world, actually. Their families have immigrated in or been there for a long time. Their families speak a lot of different languages and have a lot of different cultural beliefs, and those kids work with us to teach us mosquito biology. So we've kind of flipped the way we teach science education to kids, and we show them some phenomenon, and then we go through this process of them asking a lot of questions and figuring out what kinds of experiments they want to run. And it turns out to be profoundly enriching for all of us. Nobody's an expert when we start, and by the end, all of the kids know heaps and heaps about mosquito biology through this whole process. And our goal is that by working on mosquitoes with kids, we can get them inspired to think about entomology as an interesting thing to work on and study. We're also hoping that kids will learn and then take messages home to their parents. So go and be sort of agents of public health change by saying to their families, hey, look, there's some standing water in our backyards. We need to take care of that.
Just dump it. Mm-hmm. So there's some short-term and some long-term opportunities.
Absolutely.
There with those kids. This may be a dangerous question to ask you. Some researchers are testing things like gene editing to try to wipe out mosquito populations, destroying their ability to reproduce, getting rid of them. I know you traffic in mosquitoes. You work in mosquitoes. I mean, if we can get rid of them, should we?
Yeah, it's a dilemma, and so I appreciate that you're approaching that question with that
knowing
sort
it's
of
your
tentative approach, right? I think what we've found from all of those studies is that there really is no foolproof way to totally eradicate them. And so recently there was a study published about some work done in some islands off of China with genetically modified mosquitoes. It's really exciting to imagine that we could pinpoint that one particular mosquito that's most dangerous to public health and reduce its numbers. But the data are showing that, you know, we really don't have a silver bullet. Right. So a single approach isn't sufficient probably to do everything that we want to do. So it requires an integrated approach and an educated public. So that's why I like to think that the work we do with the kids in Des Moines is something that maybe could be helpful all over the world for mosquito control.
And that work is guaranteed for a while. Lyric, yeah. Thank you so much for your time today. Lyric Bartholomae is a UW-Madison professor who studies infectious disease agents in mosquitoes, ticks, and other parasites. Up next is the news. Then we take a closer look at an almost $500 million power line project approved by the Wisconsin Public Service Commission. I'm Keeley Boltina. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.